Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome back to In The Pink with me, Natalie Pinkham. Thank you so much for your feedback on Maurizio Pochettino. What a lovely man he was to talk to, very honest and open, and really hope, as many of you do, that he will come back to the Premier League very soon. Okay, next up, we've got a team principal from Formula One. It's Red Bull's Christian Horner. He tells me how he got into the sport, his relationship with some of the big dogs, like Helmut Marko, Bernie Ecclestone, Dietrich Mateschitz. He tells me about the support he and his wife, Jerry, give each other in their respective careers, and of course about Red Bull's chances for 2020 and beyond. Oh, and he also talks about Red Bull's new podcast, which is definitely worth a listen. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Christian Horner. So here we are, Christian, about to embark on a brand new season. You still have all the energy and look sprightly and fresh and ready for the challenge. Is that how you feel?
Well, yeah, it's always exciting, you know, the first day of testing. It's like, you know, first day back at school, really. So, you know, the new cars you see for the first time, you get to experience your own car and start to learn about it. And I mean, what's so impressive is, you know, 15 years ago, 16 years ago when I first started, you know, if you did 50 laps in a day, you'd be sort of okay with that. Here we are, having done probably 160 laps. The reliability of these cars is quite phenomenal.
It's bonkers, isn't it? I have to say that for someone... Are you 46 now? 46? How old are you? Go on.
Go on. All right, I'm 46, yeah.
46.
1973.
46. You have packed an awful lot in. You seem a kind of... Take this in the right way. Take this the way it's meant. You seem like older than your years. Like
Thank
an
you.
Old soul. I mean, you look great. I'm saying, though, you've achieved so much in actually a relatively short space of time. When Dietrich Mateschitz first took a punt on you, is that how it felt? Did it feel like he was taking a bit of a gamble, given how young you were to be appointed as the youngest ever team principal? Were you surprised that he did that?
Yes, I was, and no. That I was 31 years of age. I'd run drivers for him and Helmut in Formula 3000, which was the old Formula 2, and I'd won the championship for 3 years in a row in 2002, 3 and 4. And I'd been looking to move what originally the Arden team into Formula One, and was looking at buying Eddie Jordan's team and so on and so on. But then, you know, Helmut asked me to come and see Dietrich at the end of 2004 because they just bought what was the Jaguar team and they wanted to have a change around, you know, change the management there. And they decided that they wanted me to become, you know, team principal, and Gunter Steiner, of all people, to become technical director. And so, you know, that was the setup of the team heading into the 2005, you know, Formula One season. And so, you know, Ripple had always had a philosophy of backing youth. And I suppose they did exactly the same, you know, with me. Helmut had seen how I'd operated in Formula 3000, racing against his team. And then latterly with his drivers that he was representing for Dietrich. And, you know, Dietrich gave me the chance.
Modesty may prevent you from telling me how you really feel, but what was it you think that he saw in you that he thought you could take this team, you know, because originally you perhaps weren't taken as seriously as you should, not you personally, but the team, you know, fizzy drink company and all the rest. What was it about you? Did you think you were be good for a party?
I doubt it. I told me
that the most exciting time was the first day back at school, so you're really a geek, aren't you?
Not really. I mean, I didn't really excel at school. I was more on the social side of school than the educational side. But, I think he saw that I was a competitive person. I'd grown up in this sport. I'd been involved in racing since I've been 11 years of age. And, I wanted to win. And I wanted, I was ambitious. He shared that ambition. And, he wasn't afraid to give me a go, to take a chance. It would have been far easier to take somebody, more experienced, that had been around the block a bit more. But I think he saw something in me and gave me the chance.
And you've repaid that with your loyalty to the team. Can you ever imagine working for another team in Formula One?
Very difficult to imagine. I mean, I've been here, this is my 16th season. So, it's a long time. I feel very much, a responsibility to the team. I've grown with the team as well. I couldn't imagine being with another team.
Because sometimes we talk to drivers and they all kind of harbour secret ambitions to drive for Ferrari at one stage in their careers. Is that the same for team principals?
I don't know, not this one. I don't speak Italian. I enjoy the people that I work with. And it's been a great journey so far, in terms of being involved in the team from the very beginning, building the team, getting Adrian on board, working with him, and the great group of people that we have. And that's the biggest enjoyment I get is working with the people.
I mean, what a smart appointment that was, identifying Adrian's talent and bringing him across. Was that purely your decision? Because it was something of a coup, and the relationship that's developed between you guys, the dynamic between you, him, Helmut Marko, Dietrich, just seems to work. And from the outside looking in, you wouldn't necessarily expect it to, but it does.
Well, I'd always been a big fan of Adrian's cars. I'd sort of followed his career when he was with Leighton House. I was sponsored by one of the sponsors of the team. I then followed him when he went to Williams. And I just admired his cars. I mean, they were just pieces of art. And so when I first joined the team, I decided to apply the same philosophy that had served me well in Formula 3000, and that was to attract the best engineering staff you can. And Adrian, for me, was the all-time best, and he wasn't particularly happy or content at McLaren. And I remember making it an intentional to bump into him in the first European race in Imola. And we just started chatting, and I invited him in the energy station, and he seemed to enjoy the energy surrounding Red Bull. And then, of course, David Coulthard was our driver at the time, and so I asked David's advice. I said, look, I'm getting a sense that Adrian isn't happy at McLaren, and I'd really like to have a run at, getting him to join here. And so he immediately said, right, what we need to do is have dinner with Adrian and his then wife. And so he set that up with Marigold, Adrian's former wife, and Adrian at the Bluebird in London. And we just hit it off straight away. It turned out that he'd grown up in the same part of the UK as I had, and he's a few years older than me, but we just had a lot in common. And then it was a matter of introducing him to Dietrich, and Dietrich was incredibly supportive, to get Adrian, on board. And and then people started to take us seriously. Suddenly Adrian knew, if Adrian knew he was prepared to go to Red Bull, wow, they must be, they must be serious in their intentions. And then, quality people like Rob Marshall and, Jonathan Wheatley, those kind of guys were then easy to recruit off the back of that.
And crucially, they have stayed loyal. I think it's just so interesting to see that if you create the work, the right environment, people will stay. Is that something, I mean, I suppose looking back, you must probably bracket 2009, 2010 through to 2013 as a kind of the purple patch, if you like, of your time here, but presumably hoping to recreate that very soon.
Absolutely. You know what, the biggest asset in this business is not the factories and the motorhomes, it's the people. It's
the people that work in those facilities. And once you attract the right people, if you can provide the right environment for them and share the same goals and objectives, then, you know, I'm a great believer in continuity and consistency. And then people, you know, aren't afraid to voice an opinion for fear of being shot down. There's not a blame culture, you know, within our team. It's a completely apolitical team. And, you know, that way, you know, people have been here a long time. You know, whether it's Rob, whether it's Jonathan, whether it's Rocky, you know, they've all progressed within the organization. But, you know, Ollie Shack on Max's car was one of the first faces I saw when I walked through the doors, you know, at the beginning of 2005. And, you know, so we've had great stability and great continuity. And, of course, we went and did a load of winning between 2010 and the end of 2013. And then the hybrid formula came along, you know, introducing the new V6 turbocharged engines. And Mercedes have just, you know, dominated from that point onwards. And, you know, there's only two teams in the last 10 years that have won championships, which is ourselves and Mercedes, which is nuts when you think about it. But, you know, sport goes in cycles. And I'm determined that, you know, it'll be this team that breaks that cycle ultimately with, you know, with Mercedes. They can't win everything forever. It's, you know, inevitable at some point they will be beaten.
So given that the sport is cyclical, as you say most sports are, how do you go about doing that? Is there a set of regulation changes that can mark a kind of a catalyst for, you know, bringing success back to Red Bull?
You just got to keep chipping away at it. I think we've had a great chassis over the last few years. We've lost none of our skill in that department. And I think really with you know, the new partnership with Honda that was introduced last year, feels like we've started to build that momentum again. You know, we achieved great success with Renault during the V8 period. We then had a tough few years after that. And it feels like with Honda, they share the same goals, the same ambition, the same work ethic and determination. And I think that combination can be extremely potent.
Now, I was listening to your podcast with the lovely Tom Clarkson, mm-hmm. and it was at your house the day of Daniel's departure from the team. Yeah. Do you know, I could hear it in your voice that you were flat. I mean, and understandably so, because normally, you know, you're such a pro with all the broadcasting and you've got a lovely sort of inflection in your voice, but there was, it just felt like you'd been dumped by your girlfriend, you know. And on reflection, this is obviously like 18 months ago now. I can't believe how quickly that's gone. How do you feel about Daniel leaving Red Bull?
I was disappointed at the time because I put a lot into trying to retain Daniel and get him to stay. And I just couldn't understand his decision making. You know, I like Daniel very much. He's a great guy. He was a great member of this team. And if I take off my Red Bull hat, I couldn't understand his logic behind the move that he made. If it was for Mercedes or Ferrari, you know, I could have understood that. It was a shame because there was a great dynamic between the drivers. I was not aware of any frustration or favoritism that he felt existed within the team. It's something we talked about a lot over the years. You know, and he was a competitive driver, but he obviously felt that he needed a change. He needed a stimulus, and you know, the Max factor for sure was an element in his decision making. And you know, he's a great driver, and I hope he still goes on to achieve some success.
Do you think he regrets it?
Only Daniel can answer that. I think if he'd have been in the team last year, he'd have been challenging for victories and pole positions, but that wasn't the case. So what his thoughts on that are, you know, I'm not a mind reader.
Do you think Max is a better driver for Daniel leaving the team? Because there seemed to be a change in his approach, a sort of maturity. Maybe that would have come anyway, but it kind of felt that he had space then to grow into once Daniel had left, because Daniel's such a big personality.
I think that, you know, Max always played the younger brother. You know, Daniel had such a big personality that, you know, Max was, you know, he learnt a lot from Daniel while, you know, they were together as teammates. And I think that you know, after Daniel left, Max suddenly recognised the responsibility he had on his shoulders as the senior driver, and he definitely stepped it up a gear and became more of his own person.
He shouldered that responsibility incredibly well, and the way he's driven the team forward, the direction that he gives, you know, from the cockpit in terms of development and feedback has been outstanding.
Was there ever a time you were worried that wouldn't happen? Because he had a bit of a wobble at the start of, oh my God, my years all blur into one, but was it when Daniel won in Monaco? Yes, at the start of 18 he had a bit of a wobble. And then
really after Monaco, from Montreal onwards.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? What do you think changed? What you must have seen it firsthand.
I think he just had some reflection because, you know, both the races that Daniel won, both in China that year, you know, Max screwed up in. And then he crashed in practice in Monaco, having looked really competitive. So he didn't even get the chance to compete for that. And it was all of his own doing. And I think, you know, he obviously took a long, hard look in the mirror. And by the time he arrived in Montreal, I remember he came on his own to that race. And, you know, he wasn't afraid of confronting, you know, some of the challenges that he had, and he just got his head down, and from that point onwards, he was in incredible form.
And is Alex the right combination of drivers for him to bring out the best in each other, do you think, or is it too soon to tell?
It's too soon to tell. I think Alex is a great talent. I think he's got potential. Being Max's teammate is probably the hardest job in the paddock. I think that Alex will learn a lot from Max, and he needs to obviously apply what he learned last year, as inevitably in this business expectations, they only grow, they don't diminish.
Do you think Alex needs to be a bit more of a ruthless bastard? He's just so lovely, isn't he?
He's a really nice guy. He's bright, he's smart, he works incredibly hard. I think he does have that tenacity behind the wheel. You just don't see it, you know, when that crash helmet goes on. And I think that we'll see this year. You know, last year is very much a learning year for him. And I think we'll see this year, him reach his potential.
Because you wouldn't want him to change. He's so lovely. He's got this kind of warmth and shyness in a way that you don't want to see that get knocked out of him, because it can be a bit of a cynical old world. I mean, what do you think? They used to call it the Piranha Club. What do you think, having been in it for as long as you?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You have. How do you view F1? Because I've heard you talk a few times about, you know, deal was done on a handshake and you're really proud of that, and that means a lot. Do you think it has got goodness at its core to that extent, F1? Do you think we can nurture a driver like Alex, or do you think it's a bit of a cynical world out there and the edges get knocked off?
Well, it's a results-based business, and I think, you know, sport tends to be impatient, and I think, you know, over this 21 or 22 race season, we'll get to see that, because, you know, he's going to be measured every weekend against Max, who's arguably the most, you know, informed driver, you know, currently in the world. So that's going to be a hell of a benchmark for him.
And your views on the sport as a whole, is it a sport you'd want Monty to get involved in?
It's an interesting
sport. Maybe she could be the first Formula One world champion.
Never know. It's changed a lot. When I first came into the sport, you know, the meetings that I attended, you know, Jean Todt was representing Ferrari. Ron Dennis was there arguing for McLaren, usually with Martin Whitmarsh. You had Flavio causing chaos at Renault. Even Eddie Jordan was there at the very beginning. Peter Sauber, Frank, you know, would come to the meetings for Williams in those days. So it was a group of entrepreneurs and, you know, big characters. And when I look around the room now, it's a very different setup. It's a very different makeup of people.
Has that meant that the romance of the sport has suffered as a result? Do you think it's become sanitized? Do you think we lack characters?
I think we've certainly got characters. You've only got to have a chat with Gunther Steiner to find that out. But everything changes in time. And I think, you know, if I look back at, you know, the 31-year-old that I was when I came into the sport to the 46-year-old that I am now, I suppose I get less drawn into the emotions of and ups and downs of, you know, there's more to life ultimately than Formula One. It's a sport, it's incredibly important, but we're not saving lives. I think sometimes you do need to take a look at the bigger picture. And I think, what would have knocked me 15 years ago, you just let it go, because you know the next thing, tomorrow will be another challenge, there'll be something else. And I think just the benefit of experience and life experience gives you a broader perspective.
So is that because you've grown up with the sport, through the sport, or is it because your personal life, you're married, you've got kids, you know, you see the bigger picture? I mean, it must be bloody hard being away from your family as much as you are. I mean, I know I find it hard, and I only do about half the races.
Yeah, it's tough. I was, you know, I didn't have any children when I came into Formula One. I've got three now, and I think that, you know, everything changes. And when you get family, your perspective, you know, changes as well, because you realise there's nothing more important in life than family. And so it's a matter, I think, you know, of course, the travel demands with this job are hugely, hugely demanding. But I think, you know, when you are there at home, it's important to be present, and you can't let Formula One totally dominate your entire life. It will do its best to, but there comes a point you have to put the phone down. Otherwise, you're going to miss your children, you know, growing up or quality time with your family. So I try to be quite disciplined. You know, if it's not a race weekend, that, you know, it's family time, and, you know, they will come to a couple of races with me during the course of the year. And thank God for FaceTime. You know, what did we do before that? Modern technology enables you to be present for a bedtime story or a sports day.
It's so cool. Well, you've actually watched a sports day by FaceTime.
It's been known.
That's amazing. Because I found FaceTime actually really hard to begin with, because Wilf just kept crying. Every time he saw me, he'd look round the back of the phone and he'd try and kiss the phone, and then he realised I wasn't actually there, and it would end in tears for both of us. But I think they're a bit older now, so it's got easier. What kind of influence has Jerry on your life, your professional life and your home life to that respect?
Well, I think the great thing, you know, about Jerry, as well as being, you know, my wife and tremendously supportive, is that because of, you know, the industry she grew up in and the touring and the demands and so on, she gets it. You know, she knows that traveling's tough and sometimes, you know, lonely, and that, you know, what the demands of the job are. So she's tremendously, you know, supportive in that respect. She never demands more of my time than I can give, she's incredibly understanding. So, and it, I think, like in any marriage, there has to be a balance and a countenance there. It's somebody to bounce things off, you know. And That's really, really important, and she's incredibly supportive. So I'm very, very lucky in that respect.
I was chatting to one of the other guys in the paddock who remained nameless, who told me that he has a 24-hour cooling down period after a race before he talks to his wife again. Otherwise, he just brings in all the emotion and tension and pressure of the race. So they don't see each other 24 hours. I go, yeah, but you've just then half the time again that you're going to be together.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, if anything. I mean, she's more Latin in temperament than I am, so she gets more emotional about stuff than I do. But no, look, once the race is done, it's done. You move on. You quickly focus on the next thing. Of course, if you had a bad day, it can upset your Sunday evening. But Monday morning, you know, it's the beginning of a new week, and time to start focusing on the next race, the next event.
So focusing on the next event for you, obviously looking forward to the start of the season. The news came out recently about Aston Martin going over and Lawrence Stroll's involvement with them, going to Racing Point. How does that impact you? Are you sort of sad to see the end of that partnership, that sponsorship?
Well, it's been great for us because, you know, we entered into a partnership with Aston, who, you know, at the time were emerging from a difficult period. Adrian was really keen to do a road car. Andy Palmer, the former COO of Infiniti, who used to sponsor us, became the CEO of Aston. And so managing to put that deal together that saw Adrian's dream realized of producing this Valkyrie road car. You know, it's been a great journey. And, you know, that car is now in its development phase and will start to be delivered to customers at the end of this year. And Aston's a great company, it's a great brand, but it's been sort of like spinning two plates, you know, having two motor manufacturers on the car, on the Red Bull Formula One car. And so this, it was the right timing, you know, for Aston, who needed new investment. It was, you know, Lawrence was the right buyer. And for us, it clears the path, obviously, after the end of this year to further tighten the relationship with Honda. So I think all round it was the right solution.
Worthwhile timing wise. I remember talking to Adrian about it, and actually you at the car show, and saying that actually the Valkyrie project was a nice sweetener to keep him with you guys. But so what does that mean going forward?
It demonstrates that we can, you know, design an iconic, you know, road car. It's a Red Bull Advanced Technology. If, you know, they've designed that car to Adrian's, you know, spec, and to see that car running, you know, three of the prototypes running at Silverstone, the shakedown, you know, of RB16 at Silverstone last week was fantastic. And, you know, that car is going to be a poster pinup of hypercars, and it'll be fantastic to start to see them get delivered to the customers.
Talking of relationships, who do you think has been the single most sort of profound influence on your career? Would it be Helmut Marko?
Well, Helmut's been there since the beginning. You know, I was a young upstart. I was still driving when I first met Helmut back in 1997, and I needed to buy a trailer because I started this team in Formula 3000 because I didn't have enough money in sponsorship to go to a top team. So I thought, well, you know, I'll buy a car, and in those days you could run a single car and go racing. I'll employ a couple of mechanics and off we go. But I needed a trailer, and there was this trailer for sale that was in Austria, in Graz, and I had no idea who Helmut Marko was. So I got on a plane, went over to see this chap. I was only about 24, 25 at the time. We agreed a deal. It was £35,000.
Yeah.
Was the purchase price, which I had to borrow lease. At the time it was, because I sold it for 40 about five years later. And Helmut, I met this guy, seemed pleasant enough. You know, he promised to deliver the trailer to England. And I remember saying to my father that I'd bought this trailer. And he said, well, where is it? And I said, it was in Austria. And he said, well, you know, well, you haven't paid anything. I said, well, yeah, I paid everything for it. He said, well, to a guy that you've only just met, and how do you know it's going to be delivered? So I was sweating for about a week before it turned up.
But sure, that's a long time.
As sure to its word, you know, to his word, it turned up. And then, you know, we ended up competing against each other in Formula 3000. And of course, he then introduced me and and championed me in front of Dietrich. So, yeah, of course, he's been a very big factor. I think Bernie Eccleston, I think Dietrich, by giving me that chance. So, yeah.
And I suppose that was a test of trust at the beginning of your relationship, and he passed it with flying colours because he delivered the...
Yeah, and I delivered the cash.
There is that.
So it was a two-way.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, is there anything that keeps you awake at night? Is there anything that sort of plays on your mind?
3-year-old.
But you seem a very gathered, calm, composed guy. Aside from the old tapping foot, you don't seem to get particularly riled, even though you're passionate, clearly, about racing. So does anything trouble you? Does anything... I suppose it could be good or bad.
I'm a great believer in fate at the end of the day. You know, what's going to be is going to be. You can only influence so many things, and therefore focus on the things that you can influence rather than worrying about the things that you can't. And I think once you manage to do that, you manage to declutter your thought process. And, inevitably, I still get that apprehension at the start of a Grand Prix. I still get that buzz going into a Grand Prix weekend, but it'll take quite a bit to ruffle me.
And whilst you're still getting that, you're just going to stay? I mean, do you have any kind of like long-term game plan about when to get out of Formula One, or you're going to be here till the bitter end?
Well, long-term in Formula One is about 2.5 weeks.
You say that. Look how long you've been here already.
Yeah, but I never came here thinking I'd be here for 15, 16 years. I have no expectation to be here another 15, 16 years.
What else did you do then?
I have no idea. I'd be totally unemployable. and I think that, I'm a great believer. You just take things as they come and whatever life, throws at you. And I think that, my immediate focus is getting this team back into a winning position. I'm hungry to achieve more success with this team. I believe it can achieve a lot more. We've done an awful lot in a short space of time in the history of this sport. We won 62 Grand Prix so far, 8 World Championships, including 4 drivers, 4 constructors. And, I'd really like to add to that. So I'm still very driven to ensure that we improve those statistics.
Great stuff. Thank you for your time. It's lovely to see you. Good luck for the rest of the season. Rest of the season? The whole season?
The whole season.
Bloody
yeah,
hell, it's
exactly.
A long one.
Thank you very much.
Apart from China, probably won't be going there.
Might be.
Yeah. Really? Do you know something I don't know?
I think they're trying to find a way of cramming it. I mean, just probably mean to have a 5-header race or something.
Excellent.
Like that.
Excellent. Look forward to that.
You never know.
Yeah. We should actually tell the listeners that you have got your own podcast,
yes.
Talking Bull. And when does that come out? I think the first episode's already out, isn't it?
I'm reliably informed that it will come out on...
2 days ago.
2 days ago. So it's a great podcast. I mean, it'll be somewhere nearly as good as yours. but it's well worth a listen. I think the drivers are on it as well, talking about their hopes and expectations. And everybody does podcasts these days, You don't listen to the radio anymore. You just listen to a podcast on the way to work.
Baby. Yeah, that's good. Well, I'm delighted to have you on mine. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that was Christian Horner. I hope you enjoyed it. Please give us your feedback and let us know who else you would like me to chat to on In The Pink. And remember, we still have some of those Bose noise-cancelling headphones up for grabs in our competition and a handful of Premier League tickets too. So that was Christian Horner. Let us know your feedback on that. And don't forget to check out The Car Crowd, your chance to own a little slice of car history. So that was Christian Horner. Don't forget to check out our sponsors for today's podcast, thecarcrowd.co.uk, your chance to own a little slice of the car of your dreams.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.